Well, good morning. Can everyone hear me in the back? We okay? Great. My name is Jonathan Cresslin. I'm from North Carolina State University. Today I'm going to be talking to you about some of our work in looking at tomato rootstock genotypes for application to grafted management of bacterial wilt. We're going to look at a little bit of the disease resistance levels of these genotypes, as well as some observational points about the effect of cold stress on the epidemic involved. The two pictures here, just to give you an idea of what bacterial wilt disease actually looks like in tomato, on the left is a field where we have susceptible varieties versus varieties grafted onto resistant rootstocks, and on the right is a plus and minus disease comparison of the disease. Just to give you an overview, I'm sure all of you are quite familiar with this, but tomato is the second most important vegetable crop in the world economically. And it's grouped into both processing and fresh markets. North Carolina, where we do this work, is 99% is fresh market production, and we're the third largest fresh market producer in the country. Bacterial wilt is caused by the soil bacterium, Ralstonia solanacearum. It's devastating to the solanaceous family, especially tomato and potato. And in fact, bacterial wilt is actually considered to be one of the most devastating plant diseases in the world because Ralstonia not only infects the solanaceous groups, but also over 200 different plant species and over 30 different plant families around the world. So it's a big deal, both in the economic crops as well as in a lot of other things. Tomato resistance to bacterial wilt is quantitative and additive in nature, and it's interesting that even our most highly resistant lines are still known to consistently harbor latent infections. So there's some strange biology involved here. There's another factor to the genetics where the resistance is actually tightly associated with small fruit size and poor quality traits, and so decades and decades of breeding has not really been able to break that genetic linkage. North Carolina has an indigenous population of race 1 Ralstonia in the coastal plains in Piedmont, and then we have race 1 in the mountain region as well, but we have some suspicions that strain actually was imported from Virginia and Florida. So we've been looking at the use of tomato varieties for grafted management, and that's shown to have a lot of potential for managing this disease. We've gotten some very good results. And previous field studies with these tomato rootstock varieties have seemed to imply that there may be some of these lines may have a differential resistance response to the two geographically distinct isolates from tomato, for example, these DP lines. So going into this study, our research objectives were to assess these lines in a controlled greenhouse environment under artificial inoculation in order to verify the results that we've been observing in the field, because in the field we have to use natural inoculum pressure. We also wanted to assess these lines to test for that hypothesized differential resistance response, and then also to be able to recommend the best rootstocks for grafted tomato management across North Carolina. Then, interestingly, in the middle of our observation period of this study, this was in the off-season, and so there was an unexpected severe cold front that came through, which caused a shock stress for a few days, recoverable, but it was enough. The plant showed stress effects. So we wanted to evaluate what was the effect of that shock stress on the bacterial wilt disease. Basic methodology: we have two tomato isolates from distinct geographic regions of North Carolina, from the coastal plains and the mountains, that we applied to 11 genotypes of tomato, of variably susceptible and resistant. The FL47 was our susceptible control. We used a completely randomized block design, and each plant was assessed over every 2 to 3 days for foliar wilting with a 0 to 5 severity scale, and that occurred over a course of 42 days. We then used a few analysis methods, and if you want some details on that, you can see me afterwards or ask questions on that. We use, for this study, there's a lot of inoculation methods that are often used, but we use the root cut and soil drench method, and then confirm the presence of Ralstonia and some destructive analyses at the end of the study. I'd mentioned the cold shock, and so this is just a graph looking at the max and the min temperature over time in our study. Here is this red line is the actual inoculation date, and then this red arrow here highlights where the minimum temperature on 2 days went below that common threshold for tomatoes' tolerance to cold temperature. Then these three, this cluster of three lines, we're going to see again, but it, this first one represents that, is highlighting that particular event. In order to then assess the resistance level, we use two different area under disease pressure curves, one for the overall period and then one up right before that cold shock, just to see if there was any differences. This is another interesting one, just that we were using as kind of a diagnostic to track disease progression through the study. This is a basic incidence of whether or not plants are healthy or diseased. And so what we noticed is that overall, there was this 6 to 7 day incubation period after inoculation, which is that's exactly what we expected to find, and then a nice strong increase of incidence of diseased plants. After about 2 weeks of this, it then leveled off into this first into a plateau of no new disease occurring, and this is what we're going to call the phase one or early phase of disease progression. Then right in the middle of that plateau, almost in a fortuitous way, this cold shock event happened. And then about 5 to 7 days later, we noticed a second substantial phase of newly wilted plants, which was surprising to us. We were about ready to end the experiment there, and then suddenly we have a whole new series of plants that had been completely healthy getting diseased. So we're going to call this the phase two or the late phase. Some of the other lines are just diagnostic measures that we don't really have time to discuss at the time. So let's look a little bit at disease resistance, the results. We looked at the mean disease for the overall period and assessed those with the pairwise comparisons, and that's what this chart is representing, each genotype with its mean disease level. A couple of the big points from this is that generally there was a lot of within genotype variation that we didn't really expect to find, but it was there, and so that actually caused a lot of overlap between genotypes. But generally, they appear to group into three different disease resistance categories: highly susceptible on the left, down to highly resistant on the right. And this blue here is our Florida 47 susceptible control. There is no, like I'd mentioned, that it's all quantitative. So even our most highly resistant lines still show, we had some disease show up. Now, I mentioned that we'd taken that smaller time frame prior to the cold shock event, and this is the same graph using that particular data. And so one of the things that I want to highlight is that the relative ranking of these genotypes didn't change between the two analyses periods. However, the overall mean score was lower, and we've normalized these two onto a per-day basis so that we could actually do this comparison. But overall, there was less overall disease. Additionally, that resistance categorization is not nearly as clear. And just to highlight that in the pairwise comparison, this letter C goes from plants that were completely healthy all the way up to plants that should be highly susceptible. And so it was much more difficult at this stage to separate the genotypes by resistance level. Interestingly, a lot of published bacterial wilt papers tend to conclude their studies right around the 20 to 25 days, and so this is day 21. So it implies that perhaps there's some prematurity in those looks. We'd also were looking interested in that differential resistance response between the two geographic strains, and that's what this is highlighting. So it's, again, the genotypes, with the blue bar being the mountain strain and the red bar being the coastal plains strain. Again, due to some of that internal variation, we weren't able to conclude if any differential resistance response was present. So overall, it implies that the strains are similarly virulent on all of our tomato genotypes. Though I would like to highlight that this DP105 line, as well as the Hawaii 7997, are probably the best candidates for this differential resistance response. However, we weren't able to statistically verify that. Let's look a little bit at the effects of the cold shock in looking at the epidemiology side of things. I bring this back just to remind you of those two phases and to help in that these three bars are to help you kind of keep track of where that cold shock event occurred. So let's look at some of the lines. some of our most resistant genotypes tended to have all of their wilting occur either right up to that cold shock period or significantly before. For example, so our susceptible control was very, very tightly grouped in its disease progression over time, which is exactly what we were expecting. Some of the other ones, again, had most of the wilting occur much prior to that shock event, which is right here. But you can see that this progression over time gives you an idea of some of this internal genotype variation, which, again, some of these are commercial lines that are inbreds. Others are lines that have been open pollinated and selfed for generations after generation after generation. So still having this much variability in a controlled environment was surprising to us. Here's the interesting thing. Some of our most highly resistant lines were entirely healthy prior to that cold shock event. And so there seems to be an indication that the stress event is related to expression of wilting symptoms. Then some of our lines, particularly in that intermediate section, exhibited what we might call a biphasic epidemic pattern, where some of the population went down prior, some of the population only went down after the cold shock stress. So some concluding thoughts after all of this is that as far as resistance, we generally found the susceptible, moderately resistant, and highly resistant categories. However, the level of variation, again, made this analysis difficult, which was, again, it's an unexpected thing, and that's really what I want to highlight. Generally, the Ralstonia isolates appear to be equally virulent on tomato, which is great for, you know, practical management of this disease. You don't have to really have because we weren't able to see that differential resistance, most genotypes should perform well in most geographies in North Carolina. These are the lines that we would recommend for grafted management based on the resistance level. Just to get some more information about those lines. Some thoughts on the cold shock. The cold shock stress was primarily foliar based upon the conditions of the experiment. But over all of the genotypes that at least were still alive at that point, there was an across-the-board increase in both disease incidence and the severity of disease within the population. So this has some very interesting applications for increasing stringency of the resistance screening methodologies, as well as for looking at what's really going on here biologically. We've noticed that pattern of grouping of the genotypes into several different types of phases. We noticed that there was one or two lines that had a kind of a unclear or kind of a continuous, a couple of plants across the entire experiment. So that's a strange aspect. The mean wilt pressure was significantly increased, but the rank was not significantly different between before and after that cold shock. And what I really want to point out is that previously consistently healthy lines became diseased after that because of that cold shock, actually, interestingly, the effect of the cold shock stress brought the disease incidence levels and severity of these genotypes much more consistent with our field, previous field data, which suggests that this environmental stress is actually an important factor for reliable genetic analyses, breeding selections, et cetera. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you to some of these wonderful folks who helped me in this research, funding from the USDA, and, of course, the alma mater. Any questions?
I'm curious, did you add, an uninfected control to account for differences in soil type and environment between the two sites?
Right. We had non-inoculation controls for every single genotype, yes. No, it's the cultivar name is actually Hawaii 7997. It's an open pollinated variety, public accession. Yeah, koala may be from that line, but if you actually were to look for it, it's not going to come up as koala. No. No, we weren't. These were lines that as far as their fruit characteristic goes, are useless for commercial breeding, but they're only useful for the for grafted rootstocks.
It'd be interesting because koala has a pretty nice fruit. Mm. These tomatoes.
That would be interesting. No, but we did not test that. Questions?
I'm sort of curious, following up on your question, why would you care if the root
Well, that's, we don't really care, but the whole reason that we have to use the grafted in the first place is because we can't get good fruit quality with the resistance. Well, not quite, but we should talk afterwards. We got to let the next speaker go, but I appreciate the thoughts and the questions, and thank you.